The space shuttle program was retiring. We knew we had to replace the space shuttle, but the programs in place were so far off schedule and over budget that we were going to be launching with the Russians. So I, throughout my career, had learned and had many, many people, as I call them, space pirates, earlier in my career, who had taught me the value of investing in private sector initiatives that can then be more competitive and drive down costs. We had been launching people to space since the 1960s, and being able to hold a competition to have astronaut travel be turned over to the private sector was a policy initiative that I drove. That is understandably controversial, and the people who were getting paid billions of dollars to do this themselves didn't, of course, want to turn that over. And the government didn't want to loosen its grip on the jobs and the contracts and the districts that had been that way for years. So making change in government is hard. Doing it as a woman from the number two spot, I became the deputy administrator, not the administrator, was challenging.
Hey, everybody. That's a former deputy administrator for NASA, Lori Garver. She has a new book out called Escaping Gravity. Really interesting conversation with her. She is truly a trailblazer. That word gets overused, but not in this case. A woman who rose to the highest ranks at NASA, and obviously an agency dominated by men, and pushed back in a lot of ways and got things done in ways that most men couldn't get done, let alone women. So a really interesting conversation with her. There she's talking about, just making changes at NASA, wholesale changes that a lot of people at NASA didn't want made, and what she had to go through to get a new sort of outlook on things at NASA and sort of turn a page and move on from the shuttle program. Really interesting conversation with her. We'll get to her in a minute. Had to go to the dump this weekend. I like going to the dump. No matter how much money you have, you go to the dump, you're looking for a deal. You're looking for something, like a flat screen TV that someone left in a box unopened and just thought, well, why do I need it? And there you find it. Or, a car. No, but then I was at the dump and I was getting rushed by the guy who works at the dump. He's telling me to hurry up. Like, I'm at the dump. Why wouldn't I want to hurry up? Like, what? It's the dump. What do you think? I'm just taking in the scents, the aroma, the odor, just want to hang out and sort of take in the vision that is the compost pile. Like, of course I want to hurry up. I want to leave the dump. But only if I find the deal, then I'll stay and hang out at the dump for a little while. So if you go to the dump, don't let them push you around. Stay as long as you want. But if you stay too long, I think you got a problem. All right, Lori Garver's coming up. Enjoy her. And please keep telling friends about the podcast. We've got a lot of great guests coming up in the next few weeks. Not going to tell you who. You're going to have to check them out. But have some great people coming up. And enjoy Lori Garver. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. Joining me, very, very special guest, and has had an amazing career in life, former Deputy Administrator of NASA, Lori Garver, who has a new book out, and it's called Escaping Gravity. And it's really a tell-all about the struggles and of the commercial space flight program and the triumphs and all of that. So I really was excited to talk to you about this because, boy, this is at the forefront of our life now, commercial space travel. It's great to have you on.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So let's talk about your history a little bit. Like, you were ahead of your time at NASA and a big proponent of commercial space travel, but I guess met with some hurdles, so to speak, there. And explain that background a little bit.
Sure. Well, when I came to NASA as the head of the transition team in the Obama administration in 2008, I had been in the space community working in industry and previously at NASA in the 90s. And the space shuttle program was retiring. We knew we had to replace the space shuttle, but the programs in place were so far off schedule and over budget that we were going to be launching with the Russians. So I, throughout my career, had learned and had many, many people, as I call them, space pirates, earlier in my career who had taught me the value of investing in private sector initiatives that can then be more competitive and drive down costs. We had been launching people to space since the 1960s, and being able to hold a competition to have astronaut travel be turned over to the private sector was a policy initiative that I drove. That is understandably controversial, and the people who were getting paid billions of dollars to do this themselves didn't, of course, want to turn that over. And the government didn't want to loosen its grip on the jobs and the contracts and the districts that had been that way for years. So making change in government is hard. Doing it as a woman from the number two spot, I became the deputy administrator, not the administrator, was challenging. So I outline a lot of that in the book, but as you said, also some of the triumphs.
What was the, I think you just hit on sort of the real reason you were, you know, hitting walls with this, but what was said to you as to why commercial space travel wasn't viable or something that wasn't good for the country by those who had a vested interest in keeping it exactly where it was?
Well, every excuse possible was used, from, you know, there's no way they'll ever be able to do it, because, of course, we did have to have a leap of trust, to this is going to hurt our national security. This is something that only governments can manage. And I was charged with, you know, ruining our nation's human spaceflight, even by some of the true heroes of our history, which was difficult. You know, Neil Armstrong, Gene Cernan testified on the Hill against our plans. I had known them for years, so of course that was challenging. But I also recognized they didn't really know what it was we were trying to do, and a lot of people who grew up in the space business just wanted to keep those jobs, and I was seen as a threat. The truth is now that this path has not only allowed us to save human spaceflight, not kill it, but also to improve our national security. You have the Secretary of Defense now in his confirmation hearing speaking of how the investments we made early in these companies are allowing us to outmaneuver our adversaries. That's pretty rewarding, given I was told what I was doing was threatening our national security.
Yeah, it's a good point, because it's not just about the adversaries, right? There's so many benefits to space travel that, you know, whether it's creation of new drugs or invention of a technology that ends up in products that we use in our everyday lives, or greater security through more sophisticated missile defense systems, whatever it might be. There are a lot of branches to this tree of space travel, right? And the idea that sort of only the government can do it is really sort of absurd. But when, like you say, you're a woman and you're putting forth a major, major change in culture, it's daunting. And you talk about in the book some of the language that was used, an ugly whore, a motherfucking bitch. This all came from theoretically very bright people who are very well educated, right?
Yes, they saw me as a threat to their very business model. You know, I speak in the book of comparisons. For me, Moneyball, that movie based on the book, was just out. And, you know, there's a scene in there where the owner of the Red Sox says to Billy Bean, as he's trying to recruit him, you know, the first one over the wall always gets bloody. Whether you're impacting, whether this is government or business, people see it as a threat to their way of life. They go batshit crazy. And put that quote in the book, because I really watched that several times, because it helps me see, okay, this is just a natural way this is going to go. Of course, as a woman, this is harder for them to accept. Of course, I'm the number two and not the administrator. That made it easier to be attacked as well. But really, throughout our space quest, we've been investing in these things, I think, for the three reasons you said. I call them fear, greed, and glory. Mm-hmm. And we have the ability to address all those with our space program, human spaceflight in particular, and it's not wrong. You know, we should be leveraging our government dollar, not overspending it.
Right. Well, there's a great quote in the book. In my view, they are products, these people that were in, you know, the part of the space program, the existing space program. In my view, they are products of a system where their professional status led them to assume privilege. The halls of power were filled with others who looked and acted like them, which reinforced their beliefs and behavior. And I say that with chills, frankly, because that's what we're seeing in politics right now, right? Like there's this sense of privilege and power. And I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat, there are people that think they're just entitled to whatever they want, whenever they want it. But it's interesting because the billionaires you talk about, and the ones that I think are top of mind for everybody, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and Richard Branson, could also fall into that category of people of privilege who thinks whatever they want. So are you just sort of passing the, you know, Fabergé egg from one hand to the other, and the hands are similar? Like, how do you deal with those egos and those people who have a sense of privilege and power?
Sure. I don't give anyone a pass. I think one of my reviewers said no one is safe. you know, that is what happens, you know, power, absolute power corrupts absolutely. So I think the answers are always not to give people absolute power. In the political system, elections are supposed to handle that. But for lots of reasons, probably beyond today's podcast, that hasn't been working so well. We do have people here who, for some reason, just feel they are entitled to stay. Mm-hmm. And I've never really understood that. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's hard to understand people who have amassed hundreds of billions of dollars, because that's not even something most of us can consider thinking about. I know, again, as you said, this isn't really a partisan issue. This is an issue of people getting too invested in their own beliefs and feeling like, it's hard to find a word other than entitled. But one of the reasons I wrote the book is because going to space actually is a perfect analogy for this, because when we went to space, we turned around and got a new perspective of our Earth. We need this broader perspective. It's not about each one of us, and none of us have all the tools or answers, right? Mm-hmm. So space is bigger than us, and the biggest thing, I think the person who took the photograph Earthrise, you know, from the far side of the moon, astronaut Bill Anders in 1968, said, "We went to the moon and turned around and found and discovered Earth, and that we're all in this together." And that would be the biggest takeaway. And I think we need to keep that in mind throughout our decisions in government in particular, because sure, the billionaires, we have very little control over what they do. We need to be regulating environments where there are shared resources and so forth. But the government people, really, we need to recognize they are spending tax dollars, and the NASA programs, they belong to the public. So we should all be more aware and involved in what's happening.
You say SpaceX has a huge lead and is running faster than any of the competition, including all of the big aerospace companies. And to me, that is both fantastic and scary at the same time. Why is that scary to you?
Well, I was trying to advance the competition. Wasn't trying to create a monopoly provider. And so Boeing here is late in delivering on their contract to have astronauts go to the space station, then I think I'm very hopeful they will do that and provide some competition to SpaceX. SpaceX has also been selected for the lunar lander for NASA's next moon program, and they are the only provider selected because NASA didn't have, frankly, money for two providers. It's any company that would be a concern. Of course, the fact that it's not even a publicly traded, sort of a charismatic leader created company, it has its own challenges. Mm. Ironically, that's also what gives it its edge, because decisions can be made so efficiently, and he's put out this vision. But there are chapters yet unwritten on this. I mean, I say right before that in the book that the competition between Jeff and Elon, while Elon's ahead, it'd be hard to catch up to SpaceX unless Elon trips. Mm. So, you know, we'll have to see how that goes. And you would hate to have, you know, something happen until we have a more robust competition with more providers. But all props to SpaceX, they have delivered.
Yeah, they sure have. And so to varying degrees of success, Richard, Elon, and Jeff have all been successful in this space. What is the commonality in the three of them that's allowed that to happen? What is the common denominator? What is the magic secret sauce that they each seem to have that's similar, if there is anything?
Yeah, I believe from knowing them all, it is a vision. It is then whatever it was that got them to amass this wealth, their vision says, I want to do a legacy program. I want to do things that leave. I believe they're sincere in wanting to leave humanity better off for them being here. That I know not everyone agrees or sees that in everything they do. And we can't imagine the bubble they live in. But hey, you know, they are all guys. I think it's not really something that we should overlook. Women are not driven to amass such wealth and, you know, maybe, you know, having this power hungry nature. But again, I'm glad they're doing this. I think it helps the space program. I think it returns value to our economy and gives us, you know, a uniquely innovative way of lowering the cost of getting to space and making it more accessible. There are differences as well, and I lay out those in the book. To me, I think Bezos in particular, his vision is less about, you know, humanity going elsewhere and expanding for survival. He's much more focused on the low Earth orbit space travel and giving opportunities for people and opening accessibility. Jeff has run Blue Origin in a way that is sort of the tortoise and the hare. They think slow and steady wins the race, and they're trying to paint SpaceX as the hare. So it's a pretty healthy competition.
Yeah, competition's always good. I mean, Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's a good friend, and I co-host this show with him on Star Talk sometimes, he's a big proponent of, he's all for, you know, commercial space travel. The more that, from his perspective as a scientist, the more that can get the average person, an average, you know, in quotes, because right now the average person is going to be a billionaire or a very wealthy millionaire to be able to afford to go up. But the more people can, anything that can get more people into science, he's all for, right? And I think that's a healthy view of things. But there are people that just say, well, this is just a toy for billionaires. And this is a toy for, I'm not just talking about the billionaires who own the companies like Jeff, Richard, and Elon, but, you know, people with lots and lots of money, hedge fund guys, whatever, who just want a toy. And the toy is to go up in space and then have a little astronaut pin. How do you combat that perspective from the average person?
Sure. Well, totally agree on Neil. He's a good friend as well. And blurb my book, he's on the cover saying, you know, bring popcorn as to bear witness on this untold place of space history. So, and I just was on Star Trek Radio earlier in the week, but the criticism is because people don't really understand that the billionaires paying for these rides to space, those really aren't spending tax dollars. They're doing the opposite. They're offsetting the cost that taxpayers have been spending on space transportation and are allowing NASA to spend their very, very valuable dollars driving new technologies. We haven't, I don't know if it's marketing or communicated this very well. And I think lots of us who recognize this was going to be the path that it would take to really open up space should have been more prepared for that. You see Blue Origin and others all trying to fly people who aren't billionaires on each of the flights as well.
Yeah, so good point. Yeah.
Billionaires subsidize us taking a broader segment of society.
Well, listen, you should be up there. Of anybody, you not.
Just sign me up. Yeah.
You know, you were ahead of this curve of spirit. Let me make some phone calls for you. I'm going to get you on there. I'm going to call.
Thank you.
I'm an Amazon Prime member, so I'm sure Jeff Bezos will take my call.
Exactly.
Well, listen, the book is a great read and an important book. It's Escaping Gravity. Thank you for the work that you did at NASA, and best of luck in continuing to kind of put your perspective out there on this, because it's a unique one and I think everybody should hear it. So, and congratulations on the book, and get yourself up there into space, will you? You deserve it.
Thank you very much. Good to talk to you.
All right. That was Lori Garver. I thought she was really, really interesting, and I really admire how much she pushed forward to make things happen at NASA, especially given being a woman and given the kind of pushback that she was getting and trying to blaze new trails. Tell your friends about the podcast, spread the word around as always, and let folks know about all my social media at Paul Mercurio. Got a lot of cool stuff we've been posting there on all the platforms, including YouTube. And we will see you guys next week.